morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Bidder Information webcast. This webcast is for the AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. My name is Benjamin Chi. I'll be the presenter for today's webcast, and presenting with me is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, also with NERA as the auction manager for this competitive bidding process. With us today is also Mr. Michael McCulty, a representative of AEP Ohio that manages the auction process from AEP's on behalf of AEP Ohio. We have a few housekeeping items before we begin this presentation. The first is a disclaimer. So this entire competitive bidding process is a process that has been approved by the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, and the governing documents will include the petition of AEP Ohio, the joint settlement, as well as the commission order under case number 16-1852-ELSSO, as well as some of the documents that were filed under the proceeding. They include the bidding rules for the auction, the standard contract, also known as the Master Standard Service Offer Supply Agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. Any statements that we make on this call that we describe or refer to these documents are summaries only, and they are qualified in their entirety by our reference to such documents. You can find these governing documents and really all documents related to your participation in this auction process on the CBP website, which is a central source of information for bidders. The website address is provided here for your convenience and your reference. It's www.aepohiocbp.com. So the website itself is maintained by NERA as the auction manager. NERA is the main interface and point of contact with bidders. If you have a question, do not approach the company AEP Ohio or the commission. Please route all questions directly to NERA, who will be your main point of contact throughout this process. This will help us ensure that the CBP rules, as approved by the commission, are followed and will ensure that all bidders can be evaluated and treated equally and fairly. We will be the ones conducting and administering the auction and will present the results to the commission. For today's agenda, we have 5 parts. We will start with an overview of this auction, and then we will delve into the details of the product design and the contract and credit terms that you will be under during the supply period should you win in this auction. We will then turn to the more practical aspects of the process to explain where you can find information on the CBP website, the types of information that are available, as well as how you can apply to participate in this auction. We will end off with a couple of slides detailing what a bid is about and also about the post-bid process. A last housekeeping item here is that you may ask questions at any point in time during this webcast. The presentation itself will be posted online after this webcast. All Q&As that are asked and answered on this webcast will be converted into FAQs and posted on the procurement website as well. To ask your questions during this webcast, simply locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen, type in your question, select the box that says all panelists in the ask box, type in your questions, reference any relevant slide number, and click send to submit your question. We will respond to all questions as we go along as much as we can, as much as is practicable, and then we will certainly pause at the end of this presentation to respond to any remaining questions that are not covered throughout this presentation. In terms of an overview, this is really a third auction under this amended ESP. we have gone out for two auctions in the late part of last year and in March of this year. That was before there was a formal commission approval in terms of the commission decision or order that was issued in April 25th of 2018 this year. So as of right now, we have secured 100% of the load beginning with June 1st, 2018, and certainly some of the load will start to taper off June 1st, 2019. So the process going forward at this point is to secure supply to replace the supply that are under existing contracts that will be expiring. So as you can see on this slide, the auction that we are after is known as the November 2018 auction. The auction date is currently set to be held on November 5th. That's a Monday. And for this upcoming auction, we are featuring products for a 12-month term starting on June 1st of 2019 through May 31st of 2020. And this will replace the 12-month contract that we had previously procured in the first two auctions. The other thing to note is that throughout this presentation and the documents, you'll find the term ESP4. This term is used interchangeably with what we used to call the amended ESP3 or ESP3 extension. So you'll find these terms used, but they mean the same thing. So for this current ESP, ESP number 4, as you will see in the documents, this would be auction number 3. A recap of some of the key changes, notable changes under this current ESP is that we used to apply a credit-based tranche cap tied to the credit rating of the bidder that is applied across all auction solicitations. But the change here under the current ESP is that the credit-based tranche cap is now applied in a given auction, but across all products. If you have participated and won tranches in the first two auctions under ESP4, you will start fresh in this new auction and with a clean slate, so that the based on your credit rating, you will have the number of tranches that is associated with the credit-based tranche cap applied anew. And as the slide has referenced here, the credit-based tranche cap is no longer an overall cap across all auctions, but will be applied each time anew in a given auction solicitation. The other thing to note is that the requirements will be, they are not new, but they are requirements that are for foreign entities. If you're relying on a foreign guarantor, if you're a foreign bidder, in this process, you'll be asked to provide additional documents that are required under the standard contract. You must provide the drafts of these documents in your Part 1 submission, and you'll be required to provide executed documents that incorporate changes that may be required of you of these documents that may include a legal opinion and sworn certificates from you. We have provided here on this slide, slide number 8, the results from the prior auction that is held in March. In that auction, we featured three products, a 12-month product, 24-month product, and 36-month product, all with a delivery start of June 1st, 2018. The auction itself ran for 17 rounds. We had a starting price range between $65 and $85 per megawatt hour, and the clearing price from that auction is provided here for your reference. For the 12-month product, we cleared at $52.01 per megawatt hour. The 24-month product, we cleared at $48.29 per megawatt hour. And for the three-year product, we cleared at $46.53 per megawatt hour. And the PUCO has accepted the results as it has historically done within one business day of the close of the auction. In terms of the high-level description of the product that we are after, this is a load-following slice-of-system full requirements product. And so the load of these SSO customers will be then divided into tranches, and each tranche for which you're bidding to supply is going to be associated with a fixed percentage of load of the SSO customers. SSO customers are generally described as those customers that take retail generation from AEP Ohio, and they will exclude PIP customers. This is a transaction for physical delivery, and the PNode ID is provided here for your reference. You will be the LSE or load serving entity in this transaction, and you must perform the role of the load serving entity and will have scheduling requirements in the PJM in schedule to make sure that you schedule your supply and make the necessary arrangements for delivery of the SSO supply. So a recap of some of the key features that you should note for the product and the quantities that we are after in this November 2018 auction. The bid date or the auction start date is on November 5th, that's the Monday, and we are after a 12-month product for supply start June 1st, 2019, looking for a total of 17 tranches. There's a load cap in place of 80%, which means that no single bidder can bid more than 13 tranches at the start of the auction. Each tranche is associated with 1% of SSO load. The auction format is a descending clock auction, and there will be multiple tranches featured for a single term. In this case, more precisely, we are featuring 17 tranches of a 12-month term. This is a multi-round clock auction, and in each round, you will not name your price, but we will name your price. You, as the supplier, will state how many tranches you want to supply at the going price announced by us. From one round to the next, the auction will continue and the price will tick down as long as there is excess supply. The auction will end when there is no longer excess supply. Because there are variants in the clock auction format, we want to be very clear that in this clock auction, there will be no sealed bid round. Along the way, you will provide exit prices as you withdraw tranches throughout the auction. The auction will establish a single clearing price that will be applicable to all bidders. If you're a winning bidder, you will all get that same single clearing price. A few announcements that I have to make in this process very quickly. The first is that the range of the starting price, meaning the minimum and maximum starting prices, are as follows. When we start the auction, it will be no lower than $60 per megawatt hour, that's the minimum starting price, and will be no higher than $80 per megawatt hour, that's the maximum starting price. And the actual starting price of the auction will be announced later on in the auction process, but it will be somewhere within and inclusive of this range. In terms of the PLC information that I will provide here on this slide, please take note that the information on the PLC is provided for information only. The actual quantity to be delivered is going to be based on the load at that point in time in the supply period. This is a load following product. And so the load that is that you have to supply will change and it will depend on many factors, including switching by SSO customers, as well as any changes in demand. The PLC at this time is provided here, and the megawatt measure for each tranche is about 25 megawatts, 25.4 megawatts at this point, and the PLC as provided here is based on the 5 highest CP experience in the prior PGM planning year for SSO customers, non-shopping customers only. The other thing that I have to mention as provided in the SSO Supply Master Agreement is that you'll find this term known as seasonal factors, and at this time we are fixing the seasonal factors at 1 for summer and non-summer. So what it means is that there will be no price adjustments for the seasons under the contract. You will be paid based on the auction clearing price. In terms of other announcements and other key events that are coming up on this slide 13, we have a two-part application process, and the way I will explain very quickly here, working backwards from the November 5th auction start date, the part one process will begin almost immediately right now, and it will last through October 3rd when your part one applications are due. Part two will then proceed after, and they are due to us by October 23rd. At this time, by September 21st, in a few weeks from now, the application account or the website will be accessible to bidders. The first step, if you have not applied for an application account, is to do so. And if you're a recurring bidder that have participated in the past, you should look forward to credentials being sent to you soon. Other announcements that are upcoming, after today, you will find an update to the seasonal factors and megawatt measure if any updates are necessary to be provided to you no later than October 15. And the round one price itself will be provided to registered bidders on October 31st. And there will be a time that is scheduled for the trial auction, and that is currently scheduled for October 31st as well. In terms of the Part 1 and Part 2 application process, a few things to note. We will cover the details later on in this presentation. At this time, as an overview, just take note that the entire process has moved online. In this two-part application process, they work almost similarly. There will be an application website that you need credentials to log on to, and on that web form or that website, application website, you'll be asked to provide basic information through the web forms that are provided there. There are also these documents known as inserts that you can download and then complete them electronically, print them out. In some cases, you have to sign them and then scan and upload them back to the application website. So the application website itself will also allow you to upload other required supporting documents such as your financial statements if you're seeking unsecured credit. The Part 2 application works in the same way as the Part 1. The other types of information that will be asked of you will be things like your indicative offer. And the only thing throughout this entire process that will be outside of the application website is really to provide your pre-bid letter of credit in hard copy executed by the issuing bank and any wire transfer to AP Ohio's account if you elect to choose wire instead of a pre-bid letter of credit. Besides that, no hard copy applications forms are required. A recap of the timeline, Part 1 application window is between September 21st through noon on October 3rd. Part 2 application window starts October 10th and will end by noon on October 23rd. Once the auction has concluded, if it closed on the 5th, then on that same day, the auction manager will present the results in a confidential report to the commission for approval. The auction results themselves are subject to PUCO's approval, and the commission will have two business days after the close of the auction to render its decision. The Commission has historically acted within one business day, and if does not act within the two-day review window, then the auction results are deemed accepted. When they approve the results, they may also publicly release the auction clearing price and the name of the winning suppliers through this process. I'm indicating the timing of these events for you because the master SSO supply agreement must be fully executed and the winning suppliers must fulfill and provide the credit requirements within 3 days of the Commission's acceptance of the results. With a little bit more detail on what we are after in terms of the service that we require of you, you are bidding to provide a load following full requirement service. I will talk about the full requirements aspect here first. So as SSO suppliers, standard service offer suppliers, you assume the responsibilities of an LSE. You'll be responsible for providing a full requirements service to serve the load of SSO customers. This excludes PIT customers, and you will bear all costs that are associated with this responsibility. Full requirement service and the LSE obligations are defined in the standard contract. At the back of the contract is an attachment F that provides a sample PGM invoice that will allocate the responsibilities between AEP Ohio as the electric distribution company, the EDC, and you as the SSO supplier. I will end off the contract portion of this presentation here, talking about the credit requirements. There will be two types of credit requirements required under the contract, and there will be two different types of credit lines that are provided associated with the credit requirements. I'll tell you generally how it works first, and then I'll tell you what the requirements and the unsecured credit lines are. So how it works is that based on your credit rating and tangible net worth, or your guarantor's credit rating and tangible net worth, AEP Ohio will grant to you an unsecured line of credit. Any exposure under the contract beyond that unsecured credit line will then need to be met with cash or a letter of credit. If you are relying on the creditworthiness of a guarantor, then you need an acceptable form of guarantee in place with AEP Ohio before the line of credit can be granted to you. So here are the two requirements. The first requirement is known as the independent credit requirement. This is a flat amount that is on a per tranche basis, and that amount will decline throughout the term of the SSO supply agreement. The unsecured credit line that is tied to the independent credit requirement is known as the independent credit threshold. So that's the first requirement and the first type of unsecured credit line that is granted under the contract. The second type of exposure or requirement and credit limit that will be granted is going to be based on a mark-to-market methodology. Credit exposures are going to be based on the difference between the prevailing market price on a given day and the auction clearing price when the auction has completed, or rather on the valuation date, which is when the market prices are in effect when the auction has completed. And therefore, what we do there under the mark-to-market is simply to mark your contract value to the market, market prices at any given point in time during the supply period. The unsecured credit that is associated with the mark-to-market credit exposure is known as the credit limit under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. With that, I will turn over this time to Dr. Lacasse, who will speak to the practical aspects of your participation in this auction process. Dr. Lacasse?
Thank you, Mr. Chi. So in this first portion, I'll be talking a little bit about the CBP website. For a couple of reasons, we mentioned the governing documents in the first portion of the presentation. Just want to make sure everyone knows where to find those documents. And second, there are changes coming up in the next update to the data room that I'll be talking about in this section as well. So the website is aepohiocbp.com, and you have, in addition to the navigation bar on the left, you have the key dates and announcement that will appear on the right. In terms of the governing documents that we were discussing in the first portion, or that we mentioned in the first portion of the presentation, the order and regulatory documents are under the background section, and the other documents relevant to your participation in the auction are under the information tab. And more specifically, if you click on the information tab and then you click on the document page, you will have access to the auction rules or the CBP rules, standard contracts or master SSO supplier agreement, as well as information on qualification in the form of illustrative forms, Part 1 and Part 2 forms, the credit instruments, and all of the other documents relevant to the CBP, including the communication protocol, associated bidder rules, and also a glossary. So in terms of the data room includes a number of data series, including hourly energy, customer counts, PLC and FPL data, switching statistics, and historical unaccounted for energy. And the data room is updated on or before, mostly before, the 20th of each month to provide an additional month of data for all of these series. So I mentioned there's some changes coming up. So the changes are to the manner in which the data will be reported in the data room that will be slightly different from what's being done up to now. So starting with the next data update, so the data update for September that will be for adding June data, the data will be reported instead of being reported separately for the CSP and OPCO rate zones will be provided in one sum, so those two summed rather than provided separately. And there's going to be one commercial group consisting of both the small and large commercials. Again, those are the two changes. So aggregating CSP and OPCO 1 and 2, aggregating the commercial group from the small and large commercial. So going forward, all the data will be provided along these new categories and groups. But to help bidders, we're also providing 5 years of historical data that will be available using this new grouping and aggregation. The other feature of the website worth mentioning is that you can use the website to contact us and ask a question. So if you go to that page of the website, there's a form, the Contact Us page, and then the Ask a Question link that you see on the left-hand side of the navigation bar. You can use that to ask a question of the auction manager. We respond typically within 2 business days, very often quicker than that. And then the question and answer are posted as an FAQ on the CBP website. You can also accomplish the same thing, that is ask a question of us by simply via email at ap-cbp@nira.com. Mr. Chi, in the first part of the presentation, provided at a high level the application process, mentioning that there were going to be 2 parts to the application process. So in this section, we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about the requirements and talk also about the practicalities of submitting your application. So the first thing is for returning bidders, you'll be able to use the same credentials that you've used previously, and you will receive a reminder of those credentials by email from the auction manager. For any new bidders, the first step is to register for an online application account. As we mentioned, the entire application process, except if you're using a prebid letter credit to support your indicative offer with your Part 2 application. So aside from that one element, the rest of the application process is online. So you have to apply for an account to get credentials to be able to submit your application. And you can do that again through the Contact Us tab of the application of the CBP website using the Register for an Application Account link that you see on the left-hand side. You'll then be asked for the company name and various contact information. So you, again, can do the same thing by emailing us and requesting an application account, providing, again, the company name, the full name of a contact person. In addition, we would require a phone, an alternate phone number for that person, and, of course, an email address. So I mentioned that returning bidders will be getting a reminder of their credentials from the auction manager. Also, the application process is to some degree streamlined for returning bidder in that the Part 1 form will be pre-populated with some of the previously submitted contact information, some of the previously submitted inserts that we were discussing. However, there's still additional information that must be provided every time, even for returning bidders, for example, providing financial information and making certifications for the upcoming auction. So in the slides that follow, we'll be giving the details of those aspects of the Part 1 application where returning bidders can rely on previously submitted information versus those portions of the application where information must be provided anew every time. We mentioned the inserts, so a reminder here as we'll be talking about which inserts are required for each portion of the application, that the inserts are separate Word forms that bidders will download. Not all inserts are applicable to all bidders, so we'll be going over which inserts are required, which inserts are optional, and which inserts only apply to special circumstances. Generally, after downloaded, bidders will prepare, so fill in those Word forms, and in certain cases will be required to then print and sign, scan, and then upload the signed insert back to the application form. You'll also have an opportunity to propose modification to the pre-bid credit instruments during the Part 1 application phase, and the modifications that are already acceptable for those pre-bid credit instruments are posted on the CBP website. So we, of course, invite you to consult that document before making any requests for further modifications in case those are already deemed acceptable by AAP Ohio. So I'll be talking first about the requirements for the Part 1 application. First, you'll be asked to provide contact information. So for a main representative who would be our main point of contact regarding the application and your participation in the auction more generally, that representative can have help from nominees. So you can think about the representative and the nominees being the team for the bidder, and naming nominees, so naming additional individuals who will receive materials from the auction manager and who can respond to questions about the applications or about your participation. That's entirely optional, but if you want to do that, it allows you to have several individuals who are involved in the process, and any electronic communication that comes from us, whether it's a notification or additional documents for your participation going forward, will be provided to the representative as well as the nominees. You're also going to be asked for a legal representative in Ohio, so that's not necessarily an attorney, but simply an individual or a company that agrees to accept service of process on your behalf, and that individual or company must have an address in Ohio. You'll also have to respond to the PJM requirement, so bidders should be qualified as a market buyer and seller and qualified as a load-serving entity, so you're either going to be required to provide evidence that that's already the case, or if it's not, to provide a certification that you have investigated those requirements and that you will be fully capable of meeting those requirements by the time of the start of the supply period. Also in the Part 1 application are various certifications. For example, to have the bidder agree to the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, which is the standard contract that would be executed by any winners in the auction in AEP Ohio, agreeing to the CBP rules, and also agreeing to keep information that's related to the auction confidential. You'll also be asked to provide various financial information for purposes of a creditworthiness assessment. So you will be asked to provide annual and quarterly financial statements, credit ratings, and those will be either for the bidder or for the guarantor of a bidder. For foreign applicants or for applicants that are relying on a foreign guarantor, there is additional information that is required. And any of those documents to provide the information, the financial information, can be uploaded through the application website. It's in the Part 1 application that you can make a request for additional modifications to the pre-bid credit instruments. That's also entirely optional, and you would do that by submitting a red line of the appropriate credit instrument via upload to the application website. And those will be considered by AEP Ohio, and any modification that's accepted for one bidder will then be made available to all bidders on an optional basis. I mentioned the insert, those additional forms that are available in Word format, and here is the list of the inserts for the Part 1 application with two columns, whether they're required or optional, and whether they will be retained or waived for returning bidders. So the representative designation is to name the main representative and point of contact for purposes of the application in particular and the auction more generally, and that is required as well as the insert that the representative will fill out to agree to the responsibilities of the representative. For returning bidders, to the extent that personnel has not changed, so the representative is the same, then those do not need to be resubmitted, so you can rely on those inserts having been submitted for a prior auction under the CSP. The third insert is the designation of nominees. I mentioned that that's optional, so you can have a single representative be the point of contact for the bidder, or you can have additional individuals also be points of contact for the bidder, in which case you will fill in the nominee insert. The legal representative is to name the person or entity that will agree to accept service of process on your behalf, and the PJM requirement insert are for those entities that are not yet market buyers or sellers or LSEs and that must certify that they understand the requirements and will be able to comply. The certification that everyone will be required to make is in the sixth insert. And finally, if a bidder has a bidding agreement of any sort, that information must be disclosed and would be disclosed using the P1-7 insert. that's an overview of the Part 1 application and potentially the additional inserts that you will be required to fill in and upload with your Part 1 application. Once you have successfully completed the Part 1 application, you are a qualified bidder, and you are then invited to submit a Part 2 application to be registered as a bidder. And we mentioned some of these items already. As a part of that second portion of the application process, you will submit an indicative offer, submit pre-bid security, so financial guarantees to support that indicative offer, make certifications, including certifications for compliance with the rules related to associations and the handling of confidential information, and finally, for foreign entities, you would be providing executed additional documents as required under the master SSO supply agreement. Now, for part one, we talked a little bit about the fact that returning bidders, some of the information will be there, so contact information will be there, some of the inserts, you can rely upon them and they will be pre-populated in the part one application. In the part two application, all the requirements that I'm going to talk about have to be done by both new and by returning bidders. So I'll talk first about the indicative offer. So we announced that the minimum and maximum starting price for the upcoming auction is, the minimum is $60 per megawatt hour and the maximum is $80. You submit indicative offer means that you're submitting the maximum number of tranches that you're willing to bid at each of those two prices. So one number of tranches for the minimum starting price and one number of tranches for the maximum starting price. The indicative offer at the maximum starting price is particularly important in that it determines the maximum number of tranches that you're going to be able to bid in the auction, or what we will call later on the initial eligibility. So the number of tranches that a bidder bids in the auction can never go up, and the number of tranches that you can bid in round one is determined by the number of tranches that you're going to put in your indicative offer for the maximum starting price. So that's the first importance of that indicative offer. The second point of importance for that indicative offer is that it determines the amount of pre-bid security that's required with the Part 2 application. So for this auction, this pre-bid security is $500,000 per tranche, and it's going to be required as either cash or a letter of credit. Now, what number can you put in there? We talked about the fact that there are 17 tranches in the auction, and there's a load cap of 13. So your indicative offer is constrained by the load cap. In other words, you can't put an indicative offer above 13 tranches. You can put a lower indicative offer, of course. Also, to the extent that that it is applicable to you, the amount that you can bid and win and the amount of your indicative offer could also be further reduced depending on the creditworthiness of either the bidder or the guarantor. So for a bidder or guarantor that has credit ratings of BB or below, then BB minus or below rather, then there is an additional tranche cap, which is credit-based. And it's 10 tranches for a BB minus rating, and it's 5 tranches for a rating below that. So we talked already about the pre-bid security that you'll be required to post for this auction. Sometimes there are additional pre-bid security requirements, but there aren't any for this auction. So it's strictly the letter of credit or cash in the amount of $500 per tranche of your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. We mentioned that there are various certifications, including compliance with the association and confidential information rules. So you'll be asked to certify that you're not associated with another bidder, meaning that you don't have ties that could reduce or impair the independence or the competitiveness of those bidders, and you will also be asked to comply with various requirements to keep information related to the auction confidential. For some of those certifications, if you cannot make them, you need to state that and provide all the reasons for a further assessment from the auction manager. There are additional certification to be made as well, including that the bids in the auctions are binding and agreeing not to assign any of the rights that you would acquire as a registered bidder after completing a Part 2 application successfully. As I mentioned, to the extent that the bidder is a foreign entity or the bidder is relying on the creditworthiness of a foreign entity, then there are additional requirements, including providing executed additional documents that are required under the Master SSO Supplier Agreement, providing those documents with the Part 2 application. And that would include an opinion from foreign counsel, a sworn certificate of the corporate secretary, and any additional documents as required by the Master SSO Supplier Agreement. There are inserts in the Part 2 application as well, but very limited. So there's one insert that is required of all bidders, which has the certification that must be made and any space for additional disclosures if there's any certification that you cannot make. And for those bidders that are submitting cash as pre-bid security rather than a letter of credit, then you also have to provide a cash certification that recognizes those circumstances under which the cash may be drawn upon. So that's the overview of the application process. And now we'll talk a little bit more about bidding in the auction, so providing a little bit more detail on the auction rules, but also talking about the bidding procedure itself, so the practicalities of submitting a bid in the auction. We mentioned that the auction is a descending clock auction, and it's a multi-round process, and each of those rounds has three phases. Each phase has a certain number of minutes, fixed amount of time for each of the three phases, and bidders are provided a schedule ahead of the auction so that they know when those phases will occur. In the bidding phase, suppliers submit bids. As we mentioned, a bid means stating how many tranches a bidder wants to bid at the going price for the round, so the price that has been announced for that particular round. In terms of the price for round one, the auction manager informs, so that's not publicly stated, but the auction manager does inform the registered bidder of what that round one price is going to be no later than 3 days before the auction. Once suppliers have submitted their bids, then there's a phase in which the auction manager tabulates the results, so looking at the number of tranches that are bid, comparing it to the tranche target or the number of tranches that are needed, and calculating the price for the next round. Once the calculating phase closes, then the reporting phase begins. So in the reporting phase, information is provided back to bidder, including a range of the total excess supply in the auction and the going price for the next round. There's a possible reduction in the tranche target, so if there's insufficient supply to ensure a competitive bidding environment, then under the CBP rules, the auction manager has the discretion to reduce the tranche target. The criteria that could lead to that reduction are determined prior to the auction but are not announced to bidders. And once certain pre-specified criteria have been met, then the discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. So in round one, to be more specific about the bidding portion, a bid is simply a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the round one price. Now, a reminder that there is a limit on the number of tranches that you can bid, and that limit is called the initial eligibility, and the initial eligibility is equal to the number of tranches that you will have put as your indicative offer at the maximum starting price in the Part 2 application. So you can never go beyond that number. So it's important that that number, that indicative offer at the maximum starting price, reflect the maximum that you're willing to bid in the auction. We mentioned that at the end of each round, so there's bidding round where you submit bids, the calculating phase where you can no longer bid, you don't have access to additional information yet, and then the reporting phase where you have information that's provided to you in terms of a range of total excess supply and the next round price. So this is a sample of what that report could look like. So the total excess supply is a range, meaning that the actual excess, total excess supply in the auction is some number between 51 and 55 tranches, and you will be given that range as the total excess supply range. And you will also be provided with the price for the next round. So we were talking about the bid in round one, so the report in round one is going to provide the price for round two, where you again can state the number of tranches that you're willing to bid for that round two price. That's the sum total of the information that you have aside from the result of your own bid. So you have no information about other bidders' bids, their identities, eligibilities, or anything else. You'll be provided with additional information in the bidder user manual. So the bidder user manual will provide it to registered bidders. So upon a successful Part 2 application, and it will provide you with either a formula or a table to show you how the price decreases are going to be calculated. Generally speaking, the decrement is related to the amount of total excess supply. The greater the total excess supply in the auction, the faster the price comes down. But exactly by how much and what's the formula, what's the determination to be made, is going to be provided to bidders, and it's going to be provided to bidders as part of the bidder user manual upon a successful Part 2 application. That being said, there is a formula and there is a table and there's a determinate way to set the next round price, but the auction manager has the discretion to override the decrement, that is, to choose another price reduction, and the auction manager, to the extent that discretion is exercised, will notify bidders that the discretion to override the decrement has been exercised. Also in the bidder user manual are going to be all the possible ranges of total excess supply that are that will apply to the auction. So we talked briefly about the bid in round one, which is simply number of tranches to be bid at the going price for round one. In round two and subsequent rounds, same thing. Fundamentally, the bid is just a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the price that's announced for the round. But as the price goes down from one round to the next, although the bidder can always leave the bid unchanged, the bidder can also reduce the number of tranches that it is bidding in the auction, which is called withdrawing tranches to the auction. So again, a bidder can never increase the number of tranches that it bids, but it can decrease the number of tranches that it bids. The way in which you're going to see this phrase in the CBP rule is in terms of the bidder's eligibility. So in round two, the bidder's eligibility, or the number of tranches it can bid, is the number of tranches that it bid in round one. And in subsequent rounds, its eligibility is going to be the eligibility in the prior round minus any tranches that it withdrew from the auction. To the extent that you are reducing the number of tranches you're bidding or withdrawing tranches from the auction, then you will be required to provide an exit price, which is the last and best offer for the tranches that you're no longer bidding. So in the example here, the bidder is going from three tranches bid in round one to two tranches bid in round two as the price goes from $70 per megawatt hour to $65.75. And so the bidder is saying that one tranche, it is no longer willing to bid it at $65.75. It was willing to bid it at $70. and therefore the last and best offer has to be some price in between, so higher than 65.75 because it's not willing to bid it at that price, but and up to the last round price of $70. So in this case, the bidder is selecting an exit price of 67.37, which is greater than the current going price and below or equal to the previous going price. So that's going to continue, and bidders are going to have an opportunity to either maintain their bid or reduce their number of tranches bid. And the auction is going to continue as long as there are more tranches bid than there are available, or to say things differently, as long as the total bid exceeds the tranche target, or as long as there's positive total excess supply in the auction. Once the auction closes, there's a uniform price that's determined, and that's going to be the price for all tranches. It's basically two cases of how that auction clearing price is determined. If the auction ends and the number of tranches bid is exactly equal to the number of tranches available, then the auction clearing price will be the going price in the final round. If there are fewer tranches bid than are available, meaning that we went from a situation where we had positive total excess supply, so we had too many tranches bid compared to what was available, the tranche target, we go from that situation to a situation where we have fewer tranches bid at the going price than the tranche target, then the auction clearing price is the lowest exit price at which the tranche target is filled. And there's an example of that on this slide. So the example provides the prices for two rounds, round 11, round 12, as well as the bids for three bidders named A, B, and C. So in round 11, we have 19 tranches bid in total, and that's for a target of 17 that are needed. So we have positive total excess supply, so we have an excess of two tranches, and we go from that situation, prices lowered to 38.68, and then we go to a situation where we only have 14 tranches bid, so where we have fewer tranches bid than the target or the tranches available, and we're short by three. And that's because, basically, if you look at the individual bids, all of the bidders reduced the number of tranches they bid in aggregate by five tranches, so we went from over two to being under by three. Each of those bidders, when they withdrew tranches from the auction, had to specify an exit price, and the exit prices specified are $38.69 for bidder A, $38.99 for bidder B, and $39.42 for bidder C. So in each case, the exit price is strictly greater than the current going price of $38.68 and no larger than the prior going price of $39.42. So to fill then the tranche target of 17 tranches, we would take the 14 tranches of the going price and going price order. So then take the next two tranches with the lowest price. So those are the two tranches that are withdrawn at a final and best offer of $38.69. And that gives us 16 tranches. We're still short one. So we take one more tranche, which is the tranche that was withdrawn at an exit price of $38.99. So $38.99 is the lowest exit price at which the tranche target is filled, and therefore that becomes the auction clearing price, and it's the price for all the tranches, for all the winners in the auction. So that concludes our overview of the auction rules. The CBP rules provide all the details for both auctions of a single product and auctions of multiple products. And I'll talk a little bit now about the bidding procedure, so bidding on a more practical level. The first thing is that bidders to submit bids will do so online using specialized auction software. And the trial auction, which is on October 31st, is your opportunity to practice the bid submission procedure. including the backup bid submission procedure, which is by phone, which means that if you have technical difficulties submitting your bids using the auction software, the procedure is to phone the auction manager so that we can submit the bid on your behalf through the auction software. So you have to allow sufficient amount of time for that to happen. If you have technical difficulty, we definitely advise that you phone us as soon as you're aware of them. Now, during a bidding phase, you can bid more than once, meaning you can submit a bid, you could change your mind, and you could submit a second bid and supersede your prior bid as long as your bid is submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. So you can do this multiple times so that the valid bid, or the bid that counts, is the last bid that's submitted and that's verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. That's the bid that counts. Same thing if it's a backup bid. If it's a backup bid and you're providing that bid by phone, again, a technical assistant in the auction manager team will be submitting that bid on your behalf through the auction software. So same thing, the bid that's going to count if there is a backup bid is the last bid that's entered and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. And that's the timestamp for the bid. It's not when it's called in. It's your responsibility to submit a bid on time and to ascertain any systems that you think you need to minimize your chance that technical difficulties would impair your ability to bid in the auction. If you're providing a backup bid, it's your responsibility to make sure that your bid is complete and consistent with the auction rules. So we mentioned that you'll be submitting your bids online. The system requirements for using the auction software are really quite minimal. So you need a standard PC running Windows Vista, Windows 7 or later, or Mac operating system 10.7 or later. Of course, you need an internet connection, and we're assuming you're going to have primary access to a company network. You could have secondary access maybe through another internet service provider, such as a wireless card or any other way of connecting to the internet as a backup. And the auction software supports the most recent versions of Firefox, Safari, and Chrome, as well as Internet Explorer 11 or later. If you don't use a supported web browser, then the auction software may not work properly. So one thing to do before practicing in the trial auction is to make sure that your computer has a supported web browser. We provided the way to contact us for questions previously, which you can do through the website or at ap-cbp@nira.com. Also, for those of you who would be providing a pre-bid letter credit to support your indicative offer with your Part 2 application, as we mentioned, that's the only piece of the application that is required in hard copy. And on this slide, you have the address that you would use where you would send that pre-bid letter credit. That concludes the presentation portion of this presentation.